Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.
Good morning and welcome to the BizNews Daybreak. Today is Thursday, the 27th of August. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Namibia struck oil. Mozambique's gas revenues are about to jump. And South Africa, sitting on a comparable geological basin, has just taken another knock in the Constitutional Court. OPASA's Niall Cramer joined Alec Hogg to discuss what's being left in the ground and why. The full video is on biznews.com.
Offshore drilling typically takes place 100, maybe 150 kilometers offshore in the deep ocean. There are some close onshore plays as well. And in our reckoning, the size of the prize that is out there is the geology, regardless of what courts or anyone else might say and how those views change over time, they're unlikely, the geology is not going to change. So the size of the prize that is out there is very, very significant potentially. And we need to know what that is so we can make good decisions. Now, you referenced the court judgments, and there were two judgments over 2 days, one on the West Coast, one on the East Coast, and they went in very different directions. But both of them were essentially about process. The one on the West Coast was about the degree of frivolous litigation that could take place from activists on a serial basis again and again. And then the one on the East Coast, which you have just referenced, was the Concord one. And that found against the applicants on the basis of the amount of consultation. So for me, the key takeaway here is that the judgments we have are about process, not about whether we need energy, what form that energy should take. But if the processes are followed, then there's no reason not to continue. Let me give you a practical example. 11B, 12B, which is the area off Mussel Bay, which has already been discovered, has already been proven, that impact assessment and public participation has, they just announced yesterday that they would be restarting a new one on that.
Political commentator Sally Moeng spoke with Chris Stain on Gayton McKenzie's nepotism allegations, the ANC's Metro candidate list, and the 167 million rand cocaine bust at OR Tambo. That gives him some rare cause for optimism. Check out biznews.com for more.
He's learning a lot from the ANC. You know, look, the ANC has had 32 years of putting their own people in all the key positions of state, both inside South Africa and in our foreign missions abroad. So this guy has come in. It's not just one. Apparently 4, 5, 6, 7 boards of the National Film and Video Foundation, National Library, SA Boxing, etc., etc. So he comes in to say, okay, look, we are in. I'm going to position my own people in. That's how you take control of South. And that's how the ANC over time has taken control of South, quietly deploying its own people into key institutions. And McKenzie is a man full of himself. This man builds, he probably is the best gift to the world by God, if God exists. I'm saying, but these things catch up with them. And the things, the South African conversation we should be having is, having seen the ANC do certain things over time, because it's still the Makulu Bars of South African politics, how do we ensure that if Soli comes in or McKenzie comes in or so-and-so comes in, they don't get to do these things that are toxic? Because we can't just rely on the goodwill or good health of individuals, especially in a country where we vote over form rather than substance. You know, people come in there, they speak well in front of microphones. They say all the big things, and the Malemas of this world, the McKenzies of this world, the Adil Fadams of this world, they end up being lawmakers. in a country that requires a lot more substance than just people coming in, you know, to play heroes and heroines. So we need to have a conversation in South Africa. What kind of qualification do we need for people to get into those spaces? And I'm not just talking about, you know, academic qualification. We would tend to think it's all about academic. So what kind of ethical grounding do we need? But also what kind of systems, checks and balances do we need to make sure that never, nobody ever, irrespective of what party they come from, gets to do to South Africa what has been done to it over the past 32 years.
After 6 years in the making, South Africa's illegal mining bill is finally here. With 100 million rand fines and 30-year sentences, independent governance expert Richard Chelin discussed whether it will actually reach the kingpins. The full video is on biznews.com.
Richard, about 7 years ago, you wrote an article in which you made several suggestions. Some of those have now been incorporated in this new bill. How do you feel about that?
Well, I would say 7 years, 8 years ago is quite a long time. I think for me, it's finally something is happening, you know. And one of the key things I argued was we can't arrest our way out of this. And I think that becomes quite clear in the new bill. However, having said this, 6 years later, you know, the syndicates have only gotten richer, more violent and more organized. But I would say the bill closes a legal loophole. But for me is that the frustration is that we've lost almost, you know, half a decade while the problem, you know, gradually increased.
But what would this bill actually change?
Well, it quite interestingly, I mean, for the first time in South Africa's mining history, illegal mining itself is being defined as a specific criminal offense. If you would look at it, previously prosecutors had to rely on charges of trespassing, possession of gold-bearing material. And that was quite a legal loophole. And the bill aims to fix that. We also see that, you know, the fines move from 250,000 to 100 million. Prison sentences grow from 10 to 30 years. And I think the most interesting part of it is that it not only criminalizes the people underground, but anyone who assist in the illegal mining chain, from the drivers to the financiers.
So you think the kingpins will not remain untouched?
Well, that's what the bill aims to see. But, you know, a bill on its own, it won't solve the matter. You know, the implementation is what matters. But the way it's put out is that we target the whole chain. Because if you look at it, we've seen arrest of 60, 70, you know, illegal miners, Zamas have been arrested. Then the following week, they are back. Different people underground. Sometimes we might have one, two individual a bit higher up the chain, which are defined as kingpins, which you know, can be, there's some ways to see whether they are. But, and you know, one kingpin goes, the next one will take over. As long as the chain is still there, we need to get each and every criminal actors involved in the whole chain.
Healthcare matters, but what matters most?
Having cover for the people who keep this business going.
Bonitas is there for you when it comes. Bonitas Medical Aid for South Africa. Visit bonitas.co.za and find your plan.
From BNC9, Accountability Now's Paul Hoffman on the Madlanga Commission. What it can actually do, what it can't, and the one legal route that could still see IDAC ruled unconstitutional if the commission gets it wrong.
The Chancellor of the University of Free State says that South Africa has a greed problem. And the greed is the greed of the ANC, which has morphed itself from a glorious liberation movement into an organized crime syndicate. The Madlanga Commission, which is what we're here to discuss today, is the latest of many commissions of inquiry, which has been appointed by the president to look into some complaints that were made by General Nkonazi in July last year, when he stood up and pointed out that corruption of the Criminal Justice Administration has run rampant, not only in his home province of KZN, where I see they've just started getting to the evidence on that in the last 24 hours, but also in metros and in national police in other parts of the country. And the commission has been active since September last year. It's had its lifespan expanded or extended in order to make room for the amount of tales that have been pouring out during the course of the evidence. And it's probably as well as we start out on the discussion to look at what the terms of reference of the inquiry are. They're quite narrow in a way. It's empowered to investigate whether criminal syndicates have infiltrated or exerted undue influence over various police services, the state security agency, the judiciary, and other state institutions, as well as any member of the national executive responsible for criminal justice system in facilitating it. It's also empowered to look into the adequacy of current legislation, policies, and institutional arrangements in preventing such infiltration. Now, if you take that as a fair summary of what the Madlanga Commission is obliged to do, you'll see that it has a big job on its hands, and it's no wonder that its term has been extended and is likely to be extended again.
And we close with Reuters' latest wrap of the U.S. markets. Here's what happened on Wall Street overnight.
Wall Street's main indexes closed slightly lower on Wednesday, with the Dow dropping about 0.2%, the S&P 500 little changed, and the Nasdaq nudging down marginally. A Commerce Department report showed annual U.S. inflation increased 3.7% through July, a touch above expectations. The latest print added another wrinkle to the Federal Reserve's policy outlook, potentially raising the stakes for Fed Chair Kevin Warsh's speech Friday at the central bank's annual Jackson Hole Summit. Megan Horniman is Chief Investment Officer at Verdance Capital Advisors.
They should have raised interest rates a long time ago, at least 25 basis points with a hawkish tone. They can't wait till October. They can't wait till December. My biggest concern about the Fed is that they lose credibility with especially the long end of the Treasury curve. And that is that can have a lot of different ramifications on economic growth than just raising interest rates 25 basis points.
Meanwhile, investors were laser-focused on earnings from NVIDIA after the bell. Shares of the AI chip giant, down at the close, slid further in extended trading before flipping into positive territory. NVIDIA's quarterly revenue more than doubled, and the chipmaker forecast third-quarter revenue above Wall Street estimates, signaling that demand for its AI chips was still strong. Elsewhere in the market, shares of Moderna fell nearly 6% after strong gains on Tuesday, although the stock remained well above its trading levels before the company disclosed encouraging vaccine data last week, alongside Merck. And shares of J.M. Smucker gained more than 4% after the Folgers coffee maker forecast a smaller-than-expected decline in annual sales.
That's it for this morning's BizNews Daybreak. I'm Kerry Lanigan. Thanks for listening.
Daybreak on BizNews is proudly brought to you by Bonitas, the medical aid for South Africa.